it's very hard to change it. And loophole is a word that has negative connotations. I think it's better to say it's some tax policy that was put in there to provide favorable treatment to a certain activity that the policymakers decided they wanted to encourage.
You are listening to Illinois Public Radio's coverage of Governor Pat Quinn's budget address. Amanda Vinicky, the IPR State House Bureau Chief, also has been listening today to what the governor had to say. She is now at the Illinois Capitol, and she joins us by phone. Amanda, give us your thoughts overall of the speech. I think you knew what the framework was of this budget going into it, but what did you think of what the governor had to say?
You know, what was astounding to me was how little clapping, how little applause he received from the General Assembly as he gave that speech. We, yes, knew the framework, and he was right. There really were no surprises, and there's nothing flashy in this. As Quinn has tried to reiterate, he says that the pension problem, the nearly $100 billion of unfunded liabilities that are in his administration's favorite verb for that, squeezing out the rest of the state's needs. So really, that was the major takeaway. And I've just actually been listening to the Republican response, House Republican Leader Tom Cross and Senate Republican Leader Christine Rodogno give their feedback to the speech. And they said, overall, sure, it was a decent speech. But what Rodogno said, she took issue with the governor blaming it on the legislature for not passing any sort of pension overhaul. She said the two men, namely President of the Senate, John Cullerton, and House Speaker Mike Madigan, both Democrats, like Governor Quinn, are the ones who have the ability to do something about it. So whereas Quinn, I think, tried to be forceful, at least forceful for him, in saying it's time for you to legislate, General Assembly, the Republicans at the very least saying, hey, we've tried. We also want this to happen. So far, it's a whole lot of talk and no new plan from Governor Pat Quinn on how to go about solving those tensions, that pension issue. He said, I've laid out the parameters, but he did not come forward favoring any one particular platform, as he did just weeks ago in his State of the State speech, and he didn't unveil really any new ideas in that vein.
Yeah, he also seemed as though what he talked about was that the state had to pay its share, make sure the state pays its share into this system, into these pension systems, which he then said that his predecessors have not done through the years, one of the reasons the problem exists today. But that's really, at least it strikes me, that does not seem to be where the problem is on coming to some agreement. The problem is on what do you do about retirees? What do you do about current employees and future employees? That's really the side of this that is the biggest challenge, and he did not really get into that as much today.
No, not at all. He did say that he believes that cost of living adjustments, so basically bumps in what retirees would receive by means of pensions, should be included in any future plan. But he said that it no longer should be these compounded 3% COLAs that retirees receive now that's costing the state so much money. So he did come out and say that. Nonetheless, as you said, Sean, right now you have teachers in every school district, you have university employees such as ourselves, you have all these retired state workers that say, this is what we've been counting on, these are the benefits. And that issue hasn't changed, nothing new there.
Amanda, in just the short time after the speech, I don't know who you've had a chance to talk to or just listen in on, you mentioned the Republicans, what did they think of only paying down about 20% of the backlog of bills?
You know, I haven't had the chance to speak with a lot of people yet. I do know that Republicans have said that they think that Quinn, in, for example, his wanting to, quote-unquote, close corporate tax loopholes, that he's yet again looking to use a revenue solution to what they say is a spending problem. So the governor wants to, you know, close these tax breaks, these favors that have been given to industries to try and take in jobs, put it in a fund, and use that to pay down the bill backlog. That would pay down right now, I believe, Illinois is at about $8.7 billion. This would take at least, his administration has proposed, as you said, about $2 billion off of that. What the Quinn administration has said is, you know what, Rome wasn't built in a day. We're not going to solve this in a day. So cool your jets. We're working on it. $2 billion, they say they've already paid down. This would be another $2 billion if his plan were to go forward. And they say, you know, that's a lot of money that could be going to other things. So it's going to take some time for Illinois to get out of that.
You know, one of the things that I guess I found kind of surprising in its omission was any mention of a plan that the governor had put forward pretty consistently in past budgets and in past stages of the state, and that is to sell bonds to pay down some of these bills that we owe our service providers. Rationale being, we owe the money. It's not a question about, well, this is spending that maybe we're not going to make in the future. It's spending we already made. Excuse me. We have the bills. And where do we get the money to pay them off? We can do it a little bit at a time and hold the vendors in great jeopardy where they have to exhaust their lines of credit, particularly social service providers, or we can borrow money from banks who are in the business of lending money. We can sell bonds to people who are in the business of buying municipal paper and get the money to pay off the vendors, and then the nickel and dime paying off will occur with the debt service on the bonds that we borrowed. Now, Quinn has made that argument in the past, and it was always Republicans saying, no, we can't take on additional debt. And because to sell those bonds, to authorize their sale, would require an extraordinary majority in the General Assembly, up until this January, Republicans' votes were needed. Democrats now have the votes within their caucuses. They have the three-fifths required to be able to authorize those kinds of borrowing, those kinds of bonds that would be used to pay off the past bills, and then we would be paying debt service to people who are in the business of lending money. And I was kind of surprised that the governor didn't raise that issue.
You know, and Charlie, you're right that he did not raise that issue, and there are clearly the Democratic votes. I think, however, something that we've seen rise in popularity throughout the years is this message of austerity. So you're seeing even Democrats coming in and saying, no, we're not going to approve any new spending, whereas it used to be Democrats always wanting to spend more and more and more. And there are definitely Democrats that want that. Yesterday, for instance, Representative Will Davis of Chicago made a very open call on the floor that we need to look at new revenue. And we're seeing that happening. For instance, tomorrow, a gambling expansion bill is expected to be to go forward in Senate committee. So legislators are looking at new ways to bring in money for the state that they can spend. But you're seeing particularly a lot of those Democrats who won in this election did so on messages of not spending and keeping the budget in check. And perhaps Quinn has gotten that message. But then again, maybe we could see a borrowing bill passed if his corporate tax loophole plan doesn't go forward. Already the House has come forward with a spending cap, basically, that's $500 million under what the governor has proposed in his budget. And I think the signal has been so far that the House has won those previous fights, and so the governor isn't going to get all he wants, and spending will be less than at least he has proposed today.
And Amanda, before we let you get going, I know there's some other people you want to talk to. You did get to hear from the Republican leaders. Did they raise any other issues regarding the governor's speech today or anything such as maybe the AFSCME contract, any of that that the governor touched on?
Yeah, actually, the contract with AFSCME, again, this has been negotiated for 15 months. And finally, the Quinn administration, which there's really been no love lost between he and at least state workers in that vein of labor, came to a contract agreement. Republicans say that, you know, what Quinn has proposed, they're just not sure it's going to go forward. There's still an ongoing court case, whereas the Quinn administration has lost so far. There's chances it could be overturned that would require he pay back money that had been promised in AFSCME's last contract, so that workers say was guaranteed to them, and yet the legislature did not actually appropriate the money for. Republicans saying, hey, we don't feel like that is said and done. We want to continue pressing ahead, perhaps, with that court battle. Speaker Mike Madigan, I believe yesterday, just kind of smiled and chuckled when asked about that. So whereas the administration and AFSCME have come to an agreement, it doesn't appear as if everybody is on board with that. It will, of course, Flynn says, save a lot of money in asking retirees and state workers to pay more for their health care. He says that'll be about $900 million in savings to the state. But Republicans saying, hey, not so fast there. Yes, that's some savings, but that does not net out with all of the money that Illinois will have to spend to pay both those back raises, again, that court issue, as well as the wage hikes going forward. Flynn, of course, defending those, saying that it's yes, there are raises in these contracts, but it is at far less than previous contracts, and saying he's the governor that has done more to reduce discretionary spending and has done more to cut back on state worker salaries and expenses. For example, new employees will start out at a lower wage, and it will take longer for them to get to the highest AFSCME wages. So he's saying, hey, we've tried, and this is a compromise.
All right. Charlie, I'm going to let Amanda go. She has some people she needs to talk with. That is Amanda Vinicky. She is the Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief.
And you've been listening to live coverage from Illinois Public Radio of Governor Pat Quinn's budget address, and some analysis with Sean Crawford and Amanda Vinicky. We'll have more on the governor's budget address during our local newscasts during All Things Considered this afternoon and tomorrow morning on Morning Edition with Chris Berube. I'm Jim Meadows, filling in for Chris Berube on the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 6th of March, 2013. It's the birthday of the man who won a Nobel Prize for Literature and who also said, I've always been convinced that my true profession is that of journalist, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, born in Aracataca, Colombia, on this day in 1927, author of one of the most important books in Latin American literature, 100 Years of Solitude. He worked for a newspaper in Bogota for many years, wrote at least 3 stories a week, movie reviews, editorials, and then when everyone had gone home for the day, he'd stay in the newsroom and write fiction. He said, I liked the noise of the linotype machines, which sounded like rain. If they stopped and I was left in silence, I wouldn't be able to work. He started to write short stories. He learned from James Joyce and from Hemingway, and also from Kafka. He said the first line of Kafka's Metamorphosis almost knocked him off the bed. He was so surprised. The first line, as Gregor Samsa awoke that morning from uneasy dreams, he found himself transformed into a gigantic insect. He told an interview, when I read the line, I thought to myself that I didn't know anyone was allowed to write things like that. So I immediately started writing short stories. He said it was from James Joyce and Virginia Woolf he learned to write interior monologue, and it was from William Faulkner that he learned to write about his childhood surroundings. His birth town, Aracataca, the model for the fictional village Macondo in 100 Years of Solitude. The book that begins, many years later,